Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, how the town of Bethel is mitigating and adapting to climate change to become a smart community. The Borscht Belt Historical Marker Project unveiling more historical markers. This weekend in Hurleyville, there's one coming up commemorating the famed era. UFOs in Beach Lake, a symposium on extraterrestrials at Mildred's Lane, and Jeffersonville's first jazz fest. Plus, the folks from New Hope Community are here for our summer fun drive with a special challenge. We'll hear from them right after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Today's the third day of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. Several of the speakers last night were former primary opponents of GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump. They included Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and Trump's former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley. Former rival Florida Senator Marco Rubio appealed to the GOP delegates for unity, and he highlighted tonight's speech by Trump's newly designated running mate, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance.
Americans are people as diverse as humanity itself. But out of many, we are one. Because as the life story of our next Vice President, J.D. Vance, reminds us, we are all descendants of ordinary people who achieved extraordinary things.
Vance has written of his struggles growing up in his popular memoir, Hillbilly Elegy. The Homeland Security Department says it has opened an investigation into how the Secret Service handled the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. The agency posted a brief notice to its website today. There's no date for when the probe was launched. Separately, President Biden has ordered an independent investigation of the attack. Biden is considering some major changes to the U.S. Supreme Court, including a proposal of term limits for the justices. They have historically served life terms on the bench. NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports Biden has been more critical of the conservative-leaning court as he campaigns in a tough re-election race.
In addition to term limits, Biden is also considering an enforceable code of ethics and a constitutional amendment that would limit presidential immunity. He would need Congress to pass any of those measures, and they're highly unlikely to pass. But considering the proposals is a shift for the president, who wasn't keen on Supreme Court reforms that more left members of his party pushed him on when he was running for president last time. On the campaign trail, Biden has been critical of the court's decisions to scale back reproductive rights and affirmative action. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News.
Stocks opened mixed this morning after a big rally on Tuesday. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 125 points in early trading.
The Dow soared more than 700 points on Tuesday to close at a new high. Home building activity picked up last month. The Commerce Department says builders broke ground on 3% more homes in June than they did in May. All the gains were in multifamily units. Construction of single-family homes was down last month. High mortgage rates have been a drag on the housing market. Freddie Mac says the average interest rate on a 30-year home loan is just under 6.9%. Industrial production was up last month. Manufacturing output rose by 0.4%. Utility production jumped nearly 3% in June as hot weather and air conditioning kept electric meters spinning. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow's up nearly 150 points. This is NPR. The mayor of Paris swam in the murky waters of the Seine River this morning. The Olympic Games start in Paris in 9 days. With recent heavy rain, there's been worry the river wouldn't be clean enough to host several Olympic events. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports from Paris.
With onlookers cheering and cameras clicking away, Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo slipped into the Seine River, splashing around and swimming freestyle before getting out to talk to the media.
It's amazing. You know, it was a dream for us. We work a lot and very hard for that.
The government has spent millions to clean up the Seine River, notably building massive temporary holding tanks for sewage used in the event of heavy rains that can overwhelm sewage systems. Daily tests confirm the Seine is now clean and safe for long-distance swimming and a leg of the triathlon. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
In the U.S., New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez says he is going to appeal his convictions yesterday on fraud and bribery charges. A federal jury in New York convicted him on 16 counts. He was charged with taking payments to benefit New Jersey businessmen and for acting on behalf of the governments of Egypt and Qatar. Some fellow Democrats are calling on Menendez to resign from the Senate. Weather forecasters say extremely dangerous heat is lingering on the East Coast today. Temperatures didn't fall much overnight, so that isn't cooling things off. Heat cautions are posted from Maine down to South Carolina. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Foundation, which aims to support the well-being of people and the planet for a more creative, equitable, and sustainable future. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And yes, listeners like you who donate to this NPR station help us stay on the air. That's right. It's our summer fun drive. And we're asking for your support as we wrap up the drive in the next couple of days. It's getting close to the end here. We've got about 63% of our goal met. And a way to help us meet that goal a little quicker is through challenges. And we have a very special challenges from our friends at New Hope Community. We've got the CEO of New Hope, Debbie McGinnis, here, and new development director, Janae Miller. Good morning. How are you guys?
Janae Myers.
Oh, hi. Myers. I'm sorry. I have Miller written down. I apologize, Janae.
That's okay.
Myers. I'm going to get it right. How are you guys?
We're good. Thank you.
Good. So listen, thank you for coming in. Thank you for bringing in this challenge. You want to tell folks what that challenge is? $250 challenge?
Yes, and we're really, really encouraging everyone to meet that because we're absolutely looking for you to inch forward and complete your 100% goal.
Yeah.
So you're more than halfway there.
Yes.
And we're here to really encourage because you're such a viable resource to the community. We're here to support you and to really encourage the listening audience to be a part of making that happen. So we're happy to be a part of that.
That's so great. It's all about community, right? You guys are part of this community. We rely on community support. We rely on listener support. You guys keep the public and public media. So yes, the folks from New Hope Community contributing $250 a challenge right now. Let's meet it during this hour. Call 845-482-4141 or go to wjffradio.org. Keep the community connected, informed, inspired, all of those things that make up Radio Catskill and the entire community, including the New Hope Community. Debbie, let's remind folks about New Hope and your mission and all the great work you guys do.
I really appreciate the opportunity to share. Thank you. So New Hope Community was founded in 1975, and in the late 80s, we became a nonprofit voluntary provider agency. We support people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, both children and adults. Our mission really is to empower people with what we call IDD to live their best life. And I really think that New Hope Community, in many very impactful ways, makes that a reality. So we have an ask whatever questions if you'd like, so I can give you specific info, but do you want me to just sort of do a little
Go ahead. I mean, I was going to ask you some of the things, like you support independent living and there are programs or classes. Explain some of the, what you mean by that in terms of like living your best life.
Sure. Absolutely. So we're actually a very large organization. We're headquartered in Lac Sheldrake. And we also have a division in Westchester County. And together, I believe we have more than 1,000 people that we support and in addition, over 1,000 staff that support them. So we have about 40 residences throughout Sullivan County. And people are able to live quite independently with support of staff and be very woven into their community in very meaningful ways. We also have what's known as day habilitation without walls. They're able to do volunteer work in the community. And the point is that it's person-centered. They make choices and they are crafting and creating life experiences that speak to who they are, what they want to do, and where they'd like to go. We have supported employment opportunities, We have opportunities on our Hope Farm, which is on the campus of SUNY Sullivan. We have community rehabilitation and respite and self-direction, probably a lot of terms that most people may not be familiar with if they're not in our field, but it's all things where we sort of, you know, do a circle around them in terms of what is your choice? What can we do so that you can be you and you can be your best you?
Yeah. Do folks live in at the community, or is it independent living? Is it a combination of both?
It's a combination of both. So we have people that are living in New Hope homes. It is their home, very much so. And we also have people that will come to programs that we offer, and they are living in the community. Our Westchester division has over probably 700 people in Westchester that either live on their own or with family members and are receiving supports in the community. So they're not actually living in a home that's part of the agency. So it's really a mixed bag.
My Uncle John, who since passed away, had Down syndrome and was part of an organization back in Indiana where I grew up, and a similar organization, more of a, on his side, not at the his own home, but living with my grandmother or independent living. But every time he went to this organization, his eyes lit up. He was so happy to be there. Had so many friends from there. Do you experience the same sense of joy from folks who are part of New Hope?
We absolutely do. And you know, the thing that's so cool is we have a lot of programs that involve music and art, and we have equine therapy. We have a barn with horses, and we have a sensory garden, and we have a greenhouse where we grow all sorts of microgreens, and they choose their passion. And when we see them come together, and some of the involvement with Special Olympics, and we see them winning, you know, at a basketball tournament or flag football, or we see them piecing a band together and just cracking it out and having a blast. I mean, this is what really empowers them to have a real sense of accomplishment and happiness in their lives that we can fuel. So it's our privilege to do so.
We're talking to Debbie McGinnis from New Hope Community. They've issued a $250 challenge during our summer fund drive. Call us at 845-482-4141 or go to wjffradio.org. Also want to speak to Janae Myers, the new development director at New Hope Community. Janae, where were you before you started here, and how long have you been in the role?
I previously was with Independent Living. So they're an organization for people with disabilities. It's a cross disability service organization. So here I'm able to kind of just hone in on something very specific and very special, and really focus on enhancing the lives of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. You know, you mentioned I'm the director of development, right? But I look at my role a little bit differently. I see myself in this space where New Hope Community serves people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And without this organization, there would be less opportunity for choice and experiences and independence. And so what I get to do is find a way to fund, whether that be through community relationships or grants, but I get to fund those experiences. And so with people like you and people like those who are listening, I get to just form those relationships and come together and make dreams come true. Yeah. So, and there's so many experiences and so many examples that we can get into. But, you know, you touched on some of that and just in seeing that light up.
What are some of those examples that you could share for us?
Absolutely. So this is kind of what I've been most excited to talk about. So I'm happy to be here and happy to share this. So Debbie talked about the Special Olympics just a little bit.
Yeah.
Recently, through the New Hope Community Foundation, we were able to fund our New Hope Nights to join the Special Olympics at the Buffalo Bowl. And just stay with me here, but roll it back a little bit. Some of what our staff does is really get to know the people that we are supporting and what those hopes, wants, dreams look like, and how can we make them come true. So we had one individual working with our athletic coordinator who expressed his dream to be in those last few minutes of a game to throw that winning touchdown, or that, you know, game-saving experience. And we were able to, through the New Hope Community Foundation, bring the New Hope Knights to the Special Olympics, where in the last few minutes of the game, this individual was able to throw a pass, which turned into the game-winning touchdown. And so that, if I could name anything, is a dream come true, right?
Done. Got it. That's amazing.
That's incredible.
Wow. That's amazing. What is it that drew you to this role and to this line of work for you?
I am so passionate about choice and independence and accessibility. But something that stood out differently about New Hope Community was the culture. The culture of New Hope Community flows over the walls of New Hope. It really extends into the community. And this is a space where we get to come together, where every single person, whether that is the individual we support, the direct support professional, the administrative staff, the community at large, we all come together. We play this piece of the larger puzzle, and we really get to just support individuals the way that they want to be supported. We get to enrich lives through experiences and create opportunities. And it's just something that is very unique to New Hope Community. So
what other projects do you have coming up that you want to talk about? Or anything else you want to talk about, Debbie, that we can share with our listeners, including how they can get involved or learn more?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. We would love that. I'm so glad you asked that. So thank you for that opportunity for one more little tiny thing, because Janae was touching on our involvement in the community, and we are deeply committed to the Sullivan County community in particular, and we do a tremendous amount. We have our 7th community outreach dinner coming up in December, where we provide free hot meals and $25 gift cards to ShopRite, and we've served hundreds and hundreds of families now, and again, it'll be the 7th one this December. And we do so much within the community, and I think we donated over 1,100 pounds of food from our farm to local food pantries last year. But anybody who's interested in being a part of our life, whether it be as a volunteer, whether it be that they might need supports and services that we could be a part of, or they want us to come out and help them in some way in the community, they can go to our website. Our phone number is there. Contact information is there. They will absolutely be able to easily access the right person to talk to about whatever it is they're interested in. So, you know, it's just newhopecommunity.org, and they'll run into a beautiful website that will give them all the information they need. We would love to hear from them.
And social media as well?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. So we've got a lot going on with social media. Our Facebook posts are constant between Instagram and, I mean, you name it, we're on it. So yes.
And, you know, thank you for coming in and being part of our community. We're only able to do what we do because of the community. So you offering this challenge and helping us out with our summer fun drive means a lot to us as well. And think about it, listeners, if we weren't here to be able to be this platform, you may not know of all the great work that they're doing at New Hope, right? They do so much great work, and we're here to help broadcast that and amplify that to everybody. So spreading the word, and we're all working together here. So help us with this challenge from New Hope Community. Call us at 845-482-4141 or go to wjffradio.org. That contribution helps ensure that we remain independent and responsive to the needs and interests of the community, which includes New Hope and so many others. So thank you guys so much for coming in and for all the great work that you do. Janae, anything else you want to add before we go?
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity, because I can see
she's brimming with excitement. I'm like, she's like, don't wrap.
I just want to remind our community, because that is what we are. And without our community, we just couldn't do this. But as a community, and it's with people like you, listening right now, that we can fund experiences and choice and personal growth. And every day with you, milestones are met, and your support really makes all the difference. And together we can just really make people's dreams and aspirations come true. So thank you for your support. Please, if you have the opportunity, support us, support Radio Catskill with their fund drive, and we cannot say thank you enough.
Well, we can't say thank you enough either. And thank you for that nice message, too, especially at this time when we all need something bright in our lives. That's Janae Myers, a new development director at New Hope Community, and Debbie McGinnis, the CEO of New Hope Community. And over there in the background, Donna Fisher, director of marketing and communications. Thanks, Donna. Thank you guys much. We appreciate it. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, how climate community Bethel is becoming a smart climate community, and how some of this extreme heat might be affecting New York State crops. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org, and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
People are telling us how much they love Radio Catskill DJ shows and local talk programs, but we still haven't heard from you. Support the radio station you love. Help us meet our goal and end the fund drive. Give now at WJFFradio.org. Tell your friends, spread the word. Help us end the fund drive. WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. And a reminder, a New Hope Community issued a $250 challenge for our summer fund drive. And call us. Be the first to call at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Every contribution counts, no matter what the size. It all helps us to be able to bring you this local news, culture, and NPR right here. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Now, extreme heat is impacting the challenge and causing challenges for farmers. That extreme heat could impact New York crops. Abby Connolly with the New York Public News Network tells us more about what that could mean.
Cornell University professor of horticulture Steve Reiners says those hot stretches of 80 to 90 degree days may start to delay plant growth. He says the warmer temperatures in the summer paired with the regular frost season may result in lower crop numbers.
Although we're seeing it get warmer, it's not necessarily resulting in a major change in our frost dates, neither the spring or the fall. So we can still get that late frost or an early frost that can certainly kill the crops as well. So it's sort of the worst of both worlds when we have that happening.
As for how to beat the heat, Reiner says water is number one.
Water, water, water. Put a lot of irrigate. And this is whether you're a farmer or whether you're a gardener. If you think you've watered enough, water again.
He says a general rule to follow is for every square foot of garden, use a half gallon of water each week. In Syracuse, I'm Abby Connolly for the New York Public News Network.
The town of Bethel has been recertified as a bronze standard climate smart community by the Department of Environmental Conservation as part of New York State's Climate Smart Community Program, which supports local efforts to meet economic, social, and environmental challenges posed by climate change. Bethel is one of 23 municipalities being recognized for taking action to mitigate and adapt to climate change. To achieve Climate Smart Community certification, local governments accumulate points for planning and implementing actions that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and improve community resilience. Reporter Maren Scotton spoke to Bethel Town Supervisor Daniel Strum about Bethel's climate-friendly initiatives and the projects they've been working on for over 10 years that have earned them this recognition from the DEC.
So it actually started way back when, in about 2008 or 9, we had what was called a Bethel Green Committee, where we formed a committee just to look at the different things, energy efficiency, use of energy in town buildings, our fleet of vehicles that we have. They look at environmental issues. So over the years, the committee has morphed. It's now called Sustainable Bethel. That's what it's called now. And they've done a lot of work over the years. Their main goal is to review possibilities to help the environment and then make suggestions to the town board, pretty much. So they've been doing that, and we've been very successful, which has then in turn led to the climate, the clean energy community that we've now been recertified as a bronze. We originally got bronze a few years ago. We were the 20th municipality in New York State to be certified bronze.
Okay.
And then they actually, it only lasts, I think, 5 years or something. So we had to get recertified. So you have to do other, you know, they don't just hand it to you again. We had to do quite a bit, you know, just to get recertified.
And what were some of the things you had to do to get recertified?
There was, we did different things. We did a fleet policy, green energy policy for town buildings, you know, those kind of things. You know, to be more, you know, at the town board level, we had to do some of that. But overall, if I can just tell you a couple of things that we did to get certified, the most important ones was the, for example, we did LED lights in the town of Bethel. We have 180 town-owned streetlights. We changed them all to LEDs about 2 or 3 years ago. It probably took us 5 years to study it, you know, the pros and the cons.
Mm-hmm.
But we changed all of our town lights to street, I'm sorry, to LEDs. Our savings went from $30,000 a year to like six in energy usage. Again, we had to do a bond to pay for it, which we're paying for, but we're paying for it out of the savings. So that's huge. It helps the environment. It helps greenhouse gas emissions. It helps, you know, our bills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are, that's one of the main things that we did. The second big one, I think, is the landfill. We have a landfill. It used to be a town dump years ago, and now it's just a transfer station, you know, for recyclables and things. We had extra space there, you know, and so we did a solar project on that landfill. It's up and running right now. Cool. Huge solar project. And that gives us specifically, right, 10% off of all town electric bills because we're getting electric from the solar field. And also we get a check every year for leasing the space. I think it's 40, what is it? $28,000 a year to the town of Bethel.
Cool.
Just for leasing them the space. And it's also the county gets some money and the school districts and special districts get money, you know, out of it also.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two big ones that we did.
So it sounds like you guys have been working on sustainable initiatives like this for a while now. What has the reception been like from the community?
So I think one of the benefits is we had like a, for example, the solar project. We had to do a community campaign where we actually went out to different events, Lions Club and music events. We had a station there where we would hand out a flyer of the benefits of solar, like buying solar from our solar energy, you know, that we subscribe to that got built. So it was like a solar, it's a campaign, a public campaign. And what that does, I think, I've noticed, it gives people some buy-in, right? Like, you know, they buy into what the town is doing. They save money on their own because they could sign up for the solar also. Any business or resident could sign up. So it kind of works both ways. It gives them a like a stake, you know, in the future of the town. And then I think it looks good to be climate, you know, efficient.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. How did it feel when you got the when you found out that you got recertified as the bronze standard?
It was a lot of work, but we were very proud of the fact that, you know, we did it 5 years ago. We got the points. We got the, you know, accolades, we got plaques, you know, they give you plaques. But just to get recertified means that we're still, you know, vested in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you some, just if I can, a couple specific.
Yeah, of course.
We have two new projects. We have a new highway garage that we're building. We applied for grants, you know, state grants and NYSERDA grants, they're called. The fact that we're a clean energy community gave us more points. So we were able to get about, say, $200,000 in energy efficient dollars, you know, towards the garage and also the town hall. We're redoing the town hall because it's a little cramped in here. It's, you know, outdated. We're redoing it. And so that gave us another $200,000 thereabouts in just money for the energy improvements.
Right. So like you've put in this hard work to build this reputation as a clean energy community. And now, like, I'm sure it's easier to get projects implemented because of that going forward.
It is. And I could demonstrate, which is important, that, hey, wait, this is where the money savings are. You know, mm-hmm. this is how much we save in electric. This is how much we save by buying. I'll give you just two more examples, if I can.
Yeah.
We have a green car, an EV green car that we bought about 5 or 6 years ago, all electric.
Cool.
And we use it for going to the bank, going to the post office. You know, the staff use it. It says Town of Bethel on the side. So it kind of sets an example. We also, one more thing, we have an EV charging station that we did that got us some points. Anything I'm telling you kind of got us some points.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
EV charging sure. station about 5 years ago. And people use it all the time, you know, in a municipal lot.
And since 2008, when Bethel Green first started, what has been your proudest moment over the years that's made you most proud of Bethel as a town?
I think, you know, the solar project was pretty big. The fact that, you know, we had groundbreakings, ribbon cuttings, and the fact that it's such a long-term benefit, you know, that's pretty satisfying. This mm-hmm. is for the long term. The thing ain't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had to do a lot of work. I mean, we had studies done from Cornell. They used that in one of their engineering classes about the feasibility of doing solar. It was a big, the EPA was involved. You know, they gave us free consultation. It was a big group effort that took many years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just to get it. So that was one, the streetlights again, same thing. They're going to be here saving money for the town for hopefully 50 years or more.
When you look like 5 to 10 years down the line, what is the vision you have for your town in terms of sustainability?
Kind of on the path that we're on, where even though we're a small municipality, we could demonstrate to others that there are things we could do at the local level, right? People think you can't. We're looking at greenhouse gas emissions. We're looking at all kinds of things like that. Energy efficiency, greenhouse gas emissions, where we could save, how we could be green going forward, reduce reliance on fossil fuels. What vehicles are we buying? You know, we bought the green vehicle. We try to buy more energy efficient vehicles, every one that we do. I mean, you know, we have highway department. They're not going to go electric anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, the snow and ice, they can't do that. But short of that, you know, we try to be a model for other municipalities is really what we try to do.
That was Bethel Town Supervisor Daniel Sturm on Bethel's sustainability projects and their recognition as a climate smart community by the Department of Environmental Conservation. In Liberty, I'm Maren Scotton for Radio Catskill.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the latest Borscht Belt historical marker. This is Radio Catskill.
Imagine one day your NPR station just disappeared. All the news and shows and conversations that you love, gone. Well, we have been thinking about some backup plans. Maybe Corva Coleman could read AI-generated poetry?
Potato clouds drift in a spud-filled sea in this absurd world where I roam free.
Or maybe Steve Inskeep could do some ASMR?
I'm here to guide you through a calming journey into the heart of nature.
Or Scott Simon could read the dictionary.
Oh, here's a good one. Gongoozler. That's somebody who enjoys watching activity on canals. I'm a gongoozler.
Actually, I would listen to Scott Simon reading the dictionary. But you rely on public radio for so much more every day. So please, help us make sure those backup plans stay on the shelf. You can support this station today.
Here's how to donate.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Donate now. We have a $250 challenge from our friends at New Hope Community. So inspirational to hear from them, and so great to have them support public radio and Radio Catskill with their $250 matching challenge. So we need to match that. We need to hear from you at 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org. Make your donation right now to help provide free radio, trusted reporting, quality programming that you know and love and rely on. Help us meet this challenge before the end of Radio Catskill. And this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Borscht Belt Historical Marker Project is dedicated to preserving the history, legacy, and future of the Borscht Belt. They're unveiling more historical markers this summer, including their seventh one in Hurleyville this Sunday. And it's not just an unveiling, it's a happening, a literary and arts expo. Here to tell us more is Marissa Scheinfeld from the Borscht Belt Historical Marker Project. Marissa, good morning. So it's a happening.
It's a happening in Hurleyville. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Good. Thanks for being here. I love the alliteration and happening in Hurleyville. Tell us what's going on.
Sure. So we are in the process of creating a large-scale immersive historic marker trail that spans Sullivan County and also goes into parts of Ulster. It's going to be a projected trail of 20, and this is going to be our seventh historic marker dedication this Sunday in Hurleyville. And with the historic marker dedications, we really like to play on the town and what we can bring to the town, what the existing infrastructures we can use in the town. And in this case, Hurleyville has a performing arts center. It has really lovely small businesses. So it kind of borrows from the Alan Caprow happening, and we're having a happening in Hurleyville. It'll be Sunday at 1 o'clock.
And this historic marker pays a special tribute to someone that many know and love, the iconic Mel Brooks. Now, why Mel Brooks?
Sure. Well, Mel Brooks, really, who's become a household name, he began his comedic career at a place called the Butler Lodge in Hurleyville when he was 14. So I believe this was 1941 or 42. And he started out as a drummer. And I believe the story goes is he got the job up there drumming and busing in the dining room. And he was pulled in to a show one night when someone was sick. And that began obviously, what continues to this day is the illustrious legend and the icon of Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
And the Borscht Belt is really, we have a quote from him on the marker. He essentially says, no Borscht Belt, no Mel Brooks.
So true. I had no idea that he got his start in right here in Hurleyville as a young man. That's amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah. I think the depths of the well that we know the Borscht Belt to be is just endless. And, you know, it of course, for Catskill history and Sullivan history and Jewish history, but the way that it crossed over and the impact on American culture, music, entertainment, sports, it is just, like I said, it's this like endless well.
And you guys, this is the seventh marker. You've had a couple of other ones that were unveiled earlier this summer in May in South Fallsburg, in June in Kiamesha Lake. You know, talk about that, you know, the reception you've gotten there, as you mentioned, the well and the depth of the Borscht Belt. Are you hearing that from people in these communities when you are unveiling these markers?
Yeah, since we rolled out this project, I think we've seen such joy that comes to our dedication. The people, those that want to kind of visit and hearken back to the nostalgia and the time spent in the Borscht Belt, but so many other people come out who are learning about the rich history of the Borscht Belt. So I'd say like 99% of the time, it's just been a really like wonderful reception, warm, exciting. And we're constantly trying to figure out ways where, you know, we can bring markers into new towns. And like I said, do something special in that town and really make history fun.
And as part of the happening in Hurleyville on Sunday, the other businesses on Main Street in Hurleyville are participating. And then there's also a performance at HPAC. Can you tell us a little bit about the other things going on?
Sure. So, yes, it's going to be a small business stroll. The businesses are participating. I know Tango is doing a Borscht Belt brunch. La Salumina is doing specials, so there'll be food. And we're having a very special performance by an unbelievable musician named Sam Sedigursky. He is a member of the Philip Glass Ensemble. He tours with David Byrne, Tom Jones, Bruce Hornsby. And he wrote something called The Solomon Diaries. It's a set of three albums that evoke the Catskills. He was inspired by the Catskills and has no connection to it, but the music is very evocative and it blends klezmer, Americana, folk, jazz, and Middle Eastern rhythms. And it's going to be a very special performance. He's performing with his partner, Nathan Cochi, who is the musical director of Oklahoma on Broadway. So these two, the experience, it is going to be an experience, and highly recommend anyone that has some time on Sunday and wants to listen to some really like world-class musicians play to come out to HPAC.
An experience and a happening. Where can folks get more information and details, not only the happening in Hurleyville, but the Borscht Belt Historical Marker Project?
Sure. I also want to quickly add, at the happening in Hurleyville, we're projecting a slideshow. It's called Catskillland, Billboards of the Borscht Belt, and it's two previously unseen collections of images coming from the Historical Society, and we've partnered with them to make this slideshow set to music. There's also an author row, so it's a busy day. Our website's maytheborschtbewithyou.org, and for those that can't come this Sunday, we have two more dedications this summer, Saturday, August 17th in Bethel, and Sunday, August 25th in Woodridge, and we're already like slowly discussing our five dedications for next summer, so we're just going to keep rolling on until this trail rolls through our county.
Such a great project, and may I say, such a great website name as well.
Thank you.
May the Borscht be with you. Marissa Scheinfeld from the Borscht Belt Historical Marker Project, thank you so much for joining us, and have a great happening in Hurleyville on Sunday.
Thanks, Tim. Take care. Bye.
All right. More going on in the community to tell you about. In the Cloud of Unknowing, Encounters with the UFO Phenomenon. It's a symposium and residency session. It's at Mildred's Lane in Beach Lake today and tomorrow. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi has an interview with Dr. Robert Williams, a researcher and presenter at the symposium.
Good morning, Robert, and welcome to Radio Chatskill. And
good morning, Valerie.
So happy to have you here today because you are part of a very intriguing symposium that's taking place July 17th and 18th at Mildred's Lane or online, and it is entitled In the Cloud of Unknowing, Encounters with the UFO Phenomenon. Can you expand on this?
Yes. In a sense, it's an opportunity for a different kind of discourse on the UFO phenomenon from the point of view of artists as researchers. Very often, the phenomenon is explored by anthropologists, religious studies professors, scientists, and so on. And the voices that perhaps aren't heard very much from are those of artists. And we believe that this can bring a divergent view on the phenomenon, and we can, as a consequence, expand the conversation.
How do you see it's a different view?
Well, as I say, it's a divergent view. One of the great opportunities that artists have is a license to step out of discipline boundaries, mm-hmm. and to approach things from an entirely different perspective. We don't have reputations to worry about within the field of science or anthropology and so on. So we can ask the kind of questions that might be difficult under those circumstances, or make observations that aren't quite as clear to those within those discipline boundaries.
And I noticed on your website you pose some questions. What you see depends on your cultural context.
Yes, that seems to be one of the observations, is that the way in which we interpret experiences of such things as UFOs and ghosts and other things is through the lens of the cultural context in which you're embedded. It's difficult for us to rise above that or to separate ourselves from it. And so with the rise of technology, for example, of specific aeronautical technology, just prior to and during the Second World War, we can then see how those ideas of novel or strange flying objects might start to embed itself almost folklorically within the culture that's experiencing it. So that's really one of those points of view matters that I referred to earlier on. How it can change the way in which we understand a particular phenomenon.
How it is represented.
Yes, and it, not just represented, but how it is experienced firsthand. That seems to be one of the dynamics of what we're calling a cultural folklore that kind of informs it. So it's not only to do with understanding modern technology, it's also how those images play out in popular culture, for example. So the films that we watch, the books that we read, the plays that we see, the art that we go and look at, all of that contributes to the way in which we might interpret an event or an experience.
I noticed there was a statement here about how some of these images are encrypted.
Yes, we might say encrypted or encoded. Again, that's the role that our culture has, because there are kind of mores and expectations and images that we carry within us that are there mediated by our culture. That then means that we read them or experience them in very, very particular ways. We're conscious that this might be a reasonably controversial approach, but we are backed up by some of the researchers in the field. I'm particularly mindful of Dr. David Clark, who is one of the presenters in the symposium, who is also a folklorist as well as a journalist. And his books, he's a British academic, and his books explore the folkloric in relation to the UFO in much the same way that I'm describing it to you at the moment.
What kind of activities and lectures or discussions and films will be incorporated?
Well, we've got a very large contingent of researchers from Rice University, the Religious Studies Department there, which holds the Archives of the Impossible, compiled by Professor Jeff Kripal, who is one of our keynote speakers. So that's looking at the phenomenon through a religious studies lens, slightly more anthropological than folkloric. We have other researchers who are interested in kind of visual culture in relation to the UFO, one of whom we'll be exploring the multiple images of UFOs through popular culture, specifically American television, since the end of the last war. And, of course, we've got a number of amazing artists who are presenting too. So Jane Topping from Glasgow School of Art is presenting two films that explores the alien other, and Darren Banks, who is exploring the movie The Thing, to a whole range of responses as an avatar acting out the personality of the alien in that movie. And, of course, we have, as I mentioned, Dr. David Clark, who is exploring the folkloric aspects, and his colleague, Dr. Andrew Robinson, who's looking at the quality of the poor image of the photographs of classic UFOs. And we'll be exploring the methods by which those images were made. So it's a very, very broad symposium exploring lots of different facets of the UFO phenomenon.
And really interesting and thought-provoking and mind-expanding.
Yes, I hope so. Certainly one that we're hoping to follow up. You know, a symposium like this is the beginning, not the end.
Well,
an investigation.
Well, that is wonderful to hear. And folks can get information at Mildred Lane website. Yes. And as a reminder, it's July 17th and 18th. And it's in person as well as online. This sounds like a really fabulous endeavor.
Thank you. We think it is as well.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you.
And thanks to cultural reporter Valerie Manzi. And that was Dr. Robert Williams, researcher and presenter, talking about the symposium at Mildred's Lane today and tomorrow, In the Cloud of Unknowing, Encounters with the UFO Phenomenon. We'll take a break. And when we come back, Jeffersonville's first jazz festival coming up this weekend. This is Radio Chatskill.
So many of your fellow listeners have done their part to keep Radio Catskill on air for everyone.
How about you? Go to WJFFradio.org and make your donation now to end our summer fund drive. If you have something to give and you haven't given yet, we need to hear from you. Do your part to end the fund drive. Help us meet our goal and get back to regular programming. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
And thank you to everyone who's donated. We've heard from hundreds of folks, and that means you must like public radio on Radio Catskill. So thank you. If you haven't donated yet, you can do it now. Our summer fund drive is wrapping up at the end of the week. Call us at 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org. We have a $250 challenge from our friends at New Hope Community here. And we heard from Anonymous in Liberty. So now we just have $200 to go. We're trying to wrap this up before the end of Radio Chatskill. That's in 10 minutes. Call 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and Jeffersonville will be hosting its first jazz festival this summer for 3 days, starting Friday through the weekend, featuring many world-class musicians, including Noah Barker, who is joining us now, and Lucette Ostergren, who is a member of GEMS, who are sponsoring the jazz festival. Good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
Morning, Tim.
How are you guys?
We're good. Thanks very so much good. For having us.
First jazz festival in Jeffersonville. What took so long?
That's a really good question. As you know, Thurman Barker, he's been a community member for 30 years and is a world-class jazz musician, has traveled all over Europe, as well as being professor of jazz at Bard College for 29 years.
Yeah, and so traveling so much, maybe he didn't get a chance to host a jazz festival in his backyard. But Noah, who is Thurman's son, is going to be performing here with Thurman as well. But you're kind of featured here. You're working both days.
Yeah, I'm working both Friday and Saturday. I'll be performing solo Friday night at the Janus Center, which will include music of new music and also some music I've released, some covers. Got a few things up my sleeve. And then Saturday, we're featuring the music of Art Blakey.
And the Janus Center has a special meaning for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's the first place I studied music, actually. Yeah. So it'll be a special night. It all comes full circle.
And your teacher, Tanya Cohen, at the Janus Center, is that why you guys decided to honor her in the center to have this here?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That and the fact that they have a baby grand piano, which is really important
helpful.
For a solo piano.
Helpful for a jazz fest.
And it's also right next door to our house.
Yeah. There's the story there right there. You're like, well, 6:55, we better go next door.
Right.
Tell me a little bit more, Noah, about what's going on and you know, some of the stuff that your style, your work. We have some of that we can play a little bit if you want to talk about that after we hear a little bit of Instrumental Memory,
sure.
Which is one of your tracks. Here we go. Instrumental Memory from Noah Barker performing at the Jeffersonville Jazz Fest this weekend. You certainly have a foundation in jazz, but you know, you're able to explore your own music. Can you describe what your journey's been and how you describe your music?
Yeah. Well, I started off studying classically and took an interest in jazz late in high school and then pursued it in college. And also at that time, I was really taking a serious interest in composition and writing my own music and recording my own music. So I will kind of be dipping into all of that on Friday, playing a lot of original stuff. I have a classical piece or two prepared, as well as some jazz and pop standard stuff, and just kind of playing the gamut of of everything I've studied and enjoy about music.
And, you know, you've released several EPs under your own label.
Yes.
Which is awesome. You know, Sullivan West graduate, learned at the Janus Center, but now based in LA.
Yes.
How's that going?
It's been great. It's been really rewarding being there. There's a lot of music happening there, a lot of collaboration. I'm getting into songwriting out there and recording, and it's been a nice place to call home.
Yeah, and then on Saturday, are you performing with Thurman as well?
I am.
Who else is performing to perform the music of Art Blakey?
Yes, he's got a tribute band that him, Lou Scott, who's on bass, Patience Higgins, and James Zoller are part of. And I believe Patience and James were members of Art Blakey's band at one point.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be special to have members of the band in the tribute band.
And that's at the Backyard Park in Jeff.
Yes.
And that starts at,
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, right. Swiss Hill Road in Jeff. In case of rain, the alternate site is the Jeff Fire Department.
Exactly.
Okay.
Which we'll announce by noon on Saturday if we're switching the site.
Yeah. And, good to have a rain location.
Yes,
this weather we've been experiencing.
So we'll see.
So.
And then Sunday, the Jazz Fest continues. This is great, too, at Lulu's Social Club at 4. What's going on at Lulu's on Sunday?
There will be a trio playing. The name of the group is Mostly Other People Do the Killing. It's an interesting name, and people will have to attend to find out the exact story behind that name. It is a truly interesting name behind.
It features Mappa Elliott and Kevin Shea. Ron Stabinski, a really great group that I know that Thane's had some of those folks on his show, Living Jazz.
Yes.
But you can see them in person Sunday at 4 at Lulu's Social Club. Where can folks get more information? And is there a way to like to attend all of them?
Yes. We're actually offering this is a great deal considering that you are hearing just top-notch musicians. It's $20 at the door. For each performance, if you would like to attend all three, it's $50, which you would attend Friday night's performance and then attend all three performances.
And you guys are getting a grant to help put this on as well?
Yes, we have. Yes. Part of the REIT grant program through the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. So we've been very grateful to them each year supporting arts in our community at large and in Jeffersonville.
And to follow up, just if folks need more information, is there a Facebook page for GEMS?
Is a Facebook page for GEMS. They could also give me a call. I'm going to give you my phone number. It is 914-799-1897.
All right, one more time.
914-799-1897 or else luceteo@icloud, luceteo@icloud.com.
Such a great jazz festival with so many people, Noah.
Also, I've had a lot of questions about tickets, and we should just make it clear that all tickets will be available at the door.
As well as in advance if you need to get
them. If they want to call me,
sure.
They can call me and make a reservation.
Find you in PEX.
Yeah.
Grab her by the watermelon.
Right.
Or the saltines.
Right, exactly.
Listen, I need a ticket.
You can see me around town.
All right. Thank you guys for coming. Oh, Noah, is there anywhere if folks want to follow you in your music? Social media or website?
Social media, I'm at Noisebody, NOISEBODY on socials. And also my music, including Instrumental Memory, which was playing earlier, can be found on all streaming platforms.
Yeah.
And one thing about Art Blakey, for people that may not be familiar, Art Blakey was a really great drummer, a bebop drummer out of the 60s, and so many truly talented musicians came out of Art Blakey's band.
Yeah, and so many, it's so great you were bringing all this to the backyard, literally Backyard Park and Jeff, and right here for the weekend, the Jeffersonville Jazz Fest. Also, before we go, I want to note we made our challenge, so we did it. Thanks to Susan from Livingston Manor and Star from Narrowsburg. Star saying she loves the programming and all we're doing here for our local news and information. So thank you guys. Thank you for being here and being part of this community and for bringing such great arts and culture to the area.
Yeah, for supporting arts in the community too.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you guys. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. You can still donate 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
At NPR and this station, we're not beholden to anybody but you. Public media is central to our democracy, so please keep it strong and donate today.
Make your donation at wjffradio.org.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year, offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, not as hot and humid, clouds and sun. There still could be a damaging afternoon thunderstorm. Some of those thunderstorms could bring flooding downpours and some damaging wind gusts we've been used to the last couple of days. There's also an air quality alert, high of 84. Tonight, a couple of evening showers, otherwise overcast, low 64. On Point is next. It's 11.